Good evening, everyone. I feel like I've been away for a long, long time. 1 week. I have a couple of new faces, a familiar face. Let's do introductions around.
Wendy.
Jeffrey.
Lena.
Tom.
Zigma.
Marie.
Paul.
Nico.
Ellie.
Angie. So it's good to see you too. This is new for you. Congratulations. I said I'd say a little bit about it, and I will. It's a physical practice because we are so caught up in our minds that we give ourselves a chance to sit down and just be the body that we are and breathe. And the mind just keeps on spinning and telling stories and making movies, but it doesn't matter because it's all made up. It's not real. The only real thing is just sitting where we are and breathing quietly. And once the body gets the picture and begins to think, oh, this is kind of cool, then we begin to rest in our body, rest in our hands, and let our breath just breathe us. We don't have to do anything but just be who we are and be satisfied with that. So that's basically 2,000 years of practice in a nutshell. So what we do now is discuss something. And tonight we are talking about this book called the Vimalakirti Sutra, which is very, very old. and it's a kind of play, a kind of story about Buddha's disciples all coming to sit with Buddha and with a fellow who is very well known, who's sick in bed. And as they come, Buddha says, why don't you go and talk to Vimalakirti? He's sick. Give him a little comfort. And each one says, oh no, I couldn't go and see Vimalakirti. For one reason after another reason after another, because every time they go and talk to him, he makes it very clear that what they think isn't really quite there yet. And so he gives them a little lecture, and they don't want to go and get lectured again. So, but in the course of it, of course, they tell Buddha what Buddha told them, and so we get the lecture. A little bit of it as the one by one they go, Buddha keeps naming them. You can do it. No, no, don't make me do it. Well, you can do it. So, Carolyn launched this last week when I wasn't here, so I need to know where we are, if anyone knows, if anyone remembers.
Yeah, she started in the disciples, and I remember she was having trouble pronouncing one of the three.
Yes. Yes.
Mandakuliani.
Yes, yes, that one. I know that one. So those were the disciples, the ones in the second chapter. They were the ones who were Buddha's senior students, is what we would say now. The ones who had practiced longest with him and were the most serious ones. So they're the most famous ones, too. We all know these names. including Maude Guliani. Ananda is another one, and Mahakashapa, of course, is his most senior one. So there are lots of them in here, and each one goes to ask Vimalakirti about his illness. So then the next batch continues, because even though it's a very small room in which Vimalakirti is lying in bed, somehow all these people can manage to be in there with him. So that's the magical part of the sutra. But the teaching part is not so magical. It's very, very practical. So the first one is the bodhisattva. And bodhisattva means enlightening being, which means in Soto Zen, it means those who have dedicated their life, and if there's more life, dedicating even more lives after this life to being with others and trying to help them, like the Dalai Lama, to devote their life to compassion. So this chapter is about those who have devoted their lives to compassion. And they too are quite famous. And this is the kind of practice that we all can and do in our daily life. It's not for some esoteric fancy life or place. It's for right here, right now, which is what Dalai Lama is always talking about. So how to be compassionate. Does that mean going off into a high mountain someplace and getting all spaced out? Does it mean going into some golden room and getting all holy? Or does it mean something else? First one is Maitreya, the Buddha, Bodhisattva of the future. He's going to be the future Buddha. That's the story. So he says, I'm not competent to visit him. I'm not good enough. I couldn't do it. He said, once I was preaching and Vimalakirti came up and said, Maitreya, that's not working. You were predicted to be the next Buddha. Now tell us, is that applying to the past? Is that who you are then? Or is it going to be in your future? Or is it about right now? But you're not the future now. You got them all confused about time. When are you? Is it now? Is it then? He said, present birth lacks permanence. So all living beings are, he said, part of suchness. Suchness meaning the true nature of us. All living beings are a part of that. And even you, Maitreya, even you who are going to be the Buddha, are part of suchness too. So, if you're able to gain nirvana, then all living beings should likewise be able to get enlightened. Everybody. Because all living beings bear the marks of tranquil extinction, it's called here. So you mustn't use the teachings of the things that you were saying about prophecy, that you should just set your mind on attaining enlightenment. Only that, that's enough. Because true nature is true nature. It's already here and already now. or he said, persuade everyone to abandon any views that makes distinctions concerning the teaching. You don't have to pick everything apart and analyze it. Don't try to figure it all out. Cutting off enlightenment. He says, tranquil extinction is Bodhi. Non-contemplation is Bodhi, is enlightenment. Non-action is enlightenment. Cutting off enlightenment, for it abandons all views, removal is enlightenment, for it means removal of all deluded thoughts. So enlightenment is the ending of all signs, is this Thomas Cleary's translation. So what he's saying really is what we've just chanted in the Heart Sutra, that there's no, that form is the same as suchness, that our true nature and the form of us is not distinct from each other. It's the same thing. Non-engagement is enlightenment, because it enters into no kind of engagement with things, with objects. Non-participation, phantom-like, all these different ways, ungrasping is enlightenment. Non-differentiation, subtle and wonderful is suchness, is enlightenment. For phenomena are hard to understand. So that's the place that Maitreya didn't quite get it, because he's already on his way to being Buddha, so he wasn't so caught by... it was about trying to evade phenomena, to step aside from it, and there is no stepping aside. So then Buddha asked, and now Burton Watson has kindly translated the names of these people. This one is Shining Adornment, a young boy who said, no way, I can't go. He said, when I bowed to him, he asked me where I was coming from. He asked Vimalakirti where he was coming from, and Vimalakirti said, I'm coming from your place of practice. And I said, where is that place of practice? My place of practice? And he said, an upright mind is the place of practice, for it's without falsehood and sham. A deeply searching mind is the place of practice, for it has multiplied benefits. The mind that appears to enlightenment is the place of practice. Almsgiving is the place of practice. Constant speaking of all the different ways that we practice, not just sitting on the cushion, but meditation, wisdom, forbearance, pity is the place of practice. Compassion is the place of practice. Revealing Dharma delight, indifference is the place of practice, for it rejects both hatred and love. That's an important point, and a really difficult one for us, because we get so attached to either one. Our strong emotions keep us very not indifferent, very engaged. And then we begin to become upset and blind in many ways. we can't see clearly. Now we say love and hatred. I think it means the kind of love that we get overexcited about and the kind of hatred that we get overexcited about. It doesn't mean that we don't have emotions, but not to create a place where we're so agitated that we're not ourselves anymore. And we say that about it, don't we? Oh, I wasn't myself. I just flew off the handle. So he's pointing out that better to stay a little bit stepped back from what's happening and not get over-involved, but see it clearly. I think a lot of our practice is about just clear seeing what's really going on in me, in you, in the world. So he goes on, a disciplined mind is a place of practice. The 37 elements of the way, causes and conditions. So what he's saying is every single place you can think of is a place of practice. Right now, right here. And all the teachings of Buddha are the place of practice, right here, right now. So it's not like we have to go to a special place. There is no special place besides our own mind-body place. But we forget that. We see it when we sit, it's so obvious. We sit with our breath so straight and so calm, and then we're off somewhere, thinking about something far, far, far away. And maybe in the past, or maybe what's going to happen next. But the real person, the real place of us is where we are. So in practice, we keep bringing our mind back over and over. Oh, it's gone again. Oops, bring it back. Oops, oh, bring it back. And after a while, it becomes quite natural, and it doesn't go away so quickly, and it doesn't become such a trial and tribulation. You just see how much of it is just nonsense. It's total ridiculous nonsense. What's going on up there? It's not real. This is real. Whatever this is it. So then Buddha went to upholder of the age. And that sounds pretty impressive, upholder of the age. And asked him, and he said no. He said, he was talking to a king. He was in his quiet room, and the Mara came to him. He calls him the Devil King. But the Devil King is, in Buddhism, Mara is a sort of devil, but not exactly a devil. More like our conscience when it's going twisted, so that we can recognize many, many times when we're not thinking straight, and we can call that Mara. You know, if we get too angry or too stupid in some way, we can say, well, there's Mara again, bugging us. But it's really just me. And if we can identify it and name it, then we can do what Buddha did and say, thank you very much, Mara, I see you. And then Mara in the stories always says, oh, he sees me, this is terrible, and he runs away. So it's good psychology, actually, just to identify, oh, this is bugging me, this nasty thing. So This fellow, upholder of the age, thought it was a god. He thought Mara was a god and welcomed him. And then Mara offers him 12,000 beautiful maidens, tempts him big time. And Vimalakirti came right up and he said, "This is not a god. This is not Indra. You're totally mistaken. This is just a devil who's come to trouble and vex you." And then Mara was fearful and tried to hide himself and escape, but he couldn't do it. And he couldn't get away. And just then there was a voice in the sky saying, "Mara, give him the women, then you can escape." And he was so scared that he handed over all those 12,000 women. And Vimalakirti addressed the women, saying, "The devil has given you to me. Now it's proper that you should all set your minds on attaining enlightenment." "Okay, girls, get to work." So then he talked to them about what that was, what enlightenment really, what it meant, and how to go about it. And because they asked him, "What is this?" He called it Dharma delight, truth delight, the delight in the truth. So he talks about the delight of it, the delight to hear the truth, the delight to observe what's right, the delight to understand and see clearly how good things are, how the delight of being friendly with people, all the things that we can think of about delight that are truly wholesome and healthy and good for us. That's what he advised those 12,000 beautiful maidens. So then the devil said, "Layman, you should give up these women. He who gives all he possesses as a gift to others is a bodhisattva." Vimalakirti says, "I've already given them up. You may take them away and you may enable all living beings to fulfill their desire for the Dharma." But the women said, "How can we stay with Mara?" And he said, "Sisters, there's a teaching called the inexhaustible lamp. You must study it. This lamp is the single lamp that lights 100 or 1,000 other lamps till the darkness is all made bright with a brightness that is never ending. In this way, one bodhisattva guides and opens a path for 100 or 1,000 living beings, causing them to set their minds on enlightenment. And this desire for the way will never be extinguished or go out. By following the teaching as it has been preached, one keeps adding until one has acquired all good teachings, and that is what is called the inexhaustible lamp. Although you live in the palace of the devil, with this inexhaustible lamp, you can enable countless heavenly sons and heavenly daughters to set their minds on enlightenment. So don't worry about where you're living. Don't worry about if it's a bad place. And this is an important point, because sometimes people feel like, "Oh, this is a horrible country now." I hear people saying, "I'm going to move to Canada." I think, "Oh, wait a minute." So just understand that your place is where your heart and your belly and your speech and your mind all reside. This is your place, and this is where you can do your best work. And if it's Mara's realm, is Mara's realm, and actually that's making so much distinction that it's probably never true. It's never really true. Wherever you go, there's always goodness, and there's always some way to help. So there's one last called good virtue. Good virtue said, no way, he's not going either. And when his story was that Vimalakirti had joined the gathering he was in at his father's house. And he said to him, you're a wealthy man's son. You should not be holding a big gathering such as this. You should hold a gathering for the Dharma. Why hold a gathering for the bestowal of mere material goods? Why give a big feast and give people presents when you could give the truth to people? And he said, oh, Vimalakirti, what do you mean by that? So then he goes off on his long lecture about how controlling stinginess and greed one carries out the dana of almsgiving. So this is a little list of the six paramitas of generosity and being virtuous, not killing, not stealing, not lying, all those things. Being vigorous.
Patient,
exactly. Being patient and having a practice, a meditation practice, and using your best wisdom in all occasions. Those are the six bodhisattva practices. So Vimalakirti says, that's a whole lot better than giving a big feast. Just to do these things. To be really generous is to give of your best self. Of you, yourself, your suchness. And when that happens, you discover the suchness in others. That's how it works, how we know. We feel it in each other. He said, follow the rules for those who've left the household. Meaning all the monks who have left the house. But really, leaving the house doesn't mean leaving the house. It means letting go of what grabs us and holds us in a way that keeps us from feeling free to be with everyone and do what we need to do. That's the house that we're stuck in. And it's the house of our self-identification, of saying, oh, this is me. Even though we don't really know quite all of who we are. And if we loosen that identification up, we become surprised by all the things that we are that we don't really understand or know until we find out. So that life continues to be a long surprise. Because we're always finding out something new about ourselves. It's wonderful to see that in people. So then he did some supernatural powers. The rich man gave the Buddha a beautiful necklace, and the Buddha took it. I I'm saying Buddha, but it's Vimalakirti, accepted the necklace and divided it in two parts and presented one part to the Buddha and one part he gave to the lowliest beggars who were there at the palace. So that was his teaching. Vimalakirti said, if a donor of alms bestows gifts on the lowliest beggars with equality of mind, dispensing them with impartiality, if one exercises great compassion in equal measure without seeking regard or recompense, this may be called perfectly performing Dharma bestowal. How to really give things. It's hard to really give things. Giving is first bodhisattva principle because it tweaks so many things inside of us. We want to hold on to things. We're afraid to give things. Afraid we might lose something. So all of these things are different ways of considering how we live. And the best way. And Vimalakirti is lying in his bed, but he has been out and about and has been talking to all these people so hard that they don't want to go and talk to him anymore. So that's a little précis of the chapter 3. But I hope you all have a chance to read the whole thing. There's a lot in it. There are about 2 minutes for questions, but are there questions?
Are you in your Saturday's meditation classes? It says online it was offered twice a month.
Yes, we're sitting this coming Saturday.
Okay. Do you have time?
9 o'clock till 12.
Okay.
And then a break for lunch.
Okay.
And then 1 to 4. And you can come for some of it and slip in and out as much as you like.
Okay.
So. Well, let's do our one minute sit.
Can you explain about Ango?
Oh.
Do it via email?
Well, we can do both, all of the above. We're going to start a practice period on Saturday, which means that we have about 5 weeks, I think, until Sesshin. Sesshin is a one-week retreat up in the mountains, in the Santa Cruz Mountains. And at the end of the retreat is the end of the practice period. So some of you have done this before, but what we do is find some particular thing about our practice that we want to cultivate. Sometimes we memorize something, like memorizing the Heart Sutra or studying one particular thing that interests, just making a very deep study of something. It would be good to send out the suggestions, actually, because there are many, many good suggestions of all the different things that we could do. But it's a wonderful way to just become more present to our practice for a short period of time and just make it more the focus of our life than usual. Even though we're still out and about and living a lay life, we can bring something new into it of our practice and give ourselves a little extra. Thank you, Wendy.
1 minute, sit.